You are listening to the To and Out CFL Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
And of course, Travis Kura, Sheldon Jones, there is a lot to get to already. CFL training camp is open. We're about a week away from the first game of the CFL preseason as well, but we're coming off the heels of the announcement of Chad Kelly being suspended. And when we recorded the last episode, we knew the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts, Pinball Clemens, would be speaking on Thursday. We are now a couple days after that speech. Sheldon Jones, how has it sunk in with you?
Not well. I think I lost a little bit of a lot of respect for him, actually. But I don't know if it's really his fault. It is, but like, it seems really weird that he was so rattled and so not able to speak properly, because he's been known as, like, he's a motivational speaker, so he's always been so good with his words. So I was a little taken aback at how he kept stuttering, and it just seemed either he was uncomfortable talking about it or uncomfortable saying what he was saying. I'm not sure, but they had 3 months to figure this out. They should have had a plan A if this is true, or a plan B if it's not true, on how to deal with this publicly. And it's been a crap show ever since the lawsuit first came to be. I don't know. It's not good. That's all I can really say. Not good. Like, he said that they were there to support Chad Kelly, and they didn't really say they were there to support the female staff, other than, you know, saying that we have good female staff. And yeah, I don't know, man. It was a fumble. It was not good.
So here we are recording late on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. I hope the weekend treated you well. Now, if you didn't see the video, I'll try the old go, or I don't know, here. There, yeah, maybe find the video there. It's 15 minutes long. I'll leave the link to the, we'll call it a scrum, in the show notes as well, so you can find and, you know, maybe make your own opinion if you haven't seen it and you don't know what we're talking about here. But it was an uncomfortable watch, and I think that maybe that was probably the top three toughest days of Pinball Clemens' professional career in the CFL. Now, I'm not going to say that I lost respect for the man in a 15-minute segment of time. This is how I personally feel. I feel like he was thrown to the wolves. And I think that MLSE thought that Pinball's reputation would be enough to save how they looked to the public. So they put him in front of the mics, and it's really unfortunate that it didn't seem like they understood the gravity of the situation. There's planes flying overhead, the wind is blowing, they're outside. It's like maybe they thought it was going to be a 90-second thing. And I think they've underestimated how people are really feeling about this. And since that, the heat has been cranked up even more. So I feel like they gave Pinball some lawyer speak, some, you know, things that he's allowed to say, not allowed to say, and said, hey, go deal with it. Because where is Bill Manning in this whole process? And because there's a few things that stuck out to me as to what Pinball said. He said that he doesn't know what happened. So he's either lying, or he either legitimately doesn't know. And this is me speaking, so I'll switch the camera to just me. I don't think that Pinball Clemens is a general manager in the CFL in the most traditional sense of the word. I don't know if he's the biggest personnel guy. I don't know if he sits there and manages the salary cap like all of the other general managers across the league. You know how, and I don't mean this as an insult, general managers are generally pretty nerdy people. They begged Pinball to take this role. I think they just wanted him to have a title with teeth, so it looked like he represented the Argos to the general public. And I really think that John Murphy is the one doing the bulk of the work behind the scenes, and nobody knows. And that's why he was 100%. So quietly brought back. Mm-hmm. So maybe Pinball legitimately doesn't know. And I don't know what's worse, the fact that he doesn't know or the fact that he could be lying. You know, like, what's worse? I don't know. But it's not really an excuse because he does have that general manager title. So it kind of does become his job to know. But at the same time, I feel like the rot runs much deeper and much higher. I know Pinball was in to fix the culture of the Argos, but it clearly hasn't happened. And it clearly is a problem in the room there. But there are more people that need to speak about this. And it's really in an unfortunate situation. I feel terrible for him. I know people are really running down his character. I understand that. And I really am thankful for this space and this platform we have here on the podcast so we can have these full thought out grown up conversations because as I've noticed the past week, and I've tried to stay away from Twitter and social media, it almost seems impossible to have those conversations that aren't full of buzzwords and attacks and supercharged language like that. It was a really tough day and an even tougher look, Sheldon. I think the fact that Chad Kelly was present for day one of rookie camp. Now, I realize people are starting to throw the CFL under the bus when it comes to this, but we know that it's a collective bargaining decision. And I don't think that it's as simple as the CFL saying he can't practice kind of thing. But again, MLSE, the Argos, underestimating the situation, the gravity of it, and having him out there. A bad look all around to have him there. He's not been at main camp, which started Sunday, but to have him there day one, that was a terrible look.
It was, and again, they had 3 months to get planned for this. Like if they have a pending lawsuit that maybe didn't get settled yet, you have to understand from a PR standpoint that this is a bad look. Especially if it's after he's suspended. If the suspension hadn't come yet, I can completely understand why he would be out there and why he would be still participating, I guess, because, you know, nothing had come out other than the accusation. But now that this investigation happened, it basically proves that it's happened. And Pinball himself admitted that, to his knowledge, everything in that report happened. That is a very key thing that he said, because nothing has happened to John Murphy. And specifically in that lawsuit, it says that she went to John Murphy, said what was happening, and he told her that she shouldn't have said anything and opened this can of worms. So, yeah.
It's just really concerning that it seems like he's being protected, you know?
Yeah. And I get it. Like you said, it's a 90% chance that he is the main person who is the general manager. And I don't know why they didn't just make Pinball president, because that's typically the role that a former player who's good with this kind of thing does. Yeah. The Riders had Jim Hobson. Like, sorry, I'm going to be a homer again because I said something about the Riders.
We'll get to that.
So it's just... and he said he's going to take the fall for this, because he probably is going to take the fall for this. And that's not good.
Like, that sucks. They just put him in to take all of the punishment and be the face of this thing, which, I don't want to try and I don't want to try to defend him, but there's a lot of layers to this, and it is just starting. For sure. I really believe that.
Oh, there's way more to come out of this, of course. And I think, as stupid as it sounds, they probably thought, because this press conference was going to be on the same day that they fired Sheldon Keefe, that...
Right, maybe.
That it's going to fly under the radar. But the CFL community might be small, but it's loud. At least in my echo chamber, I guess. It's loud.
Yeah, and my algorithm tells me that the fans are going to hold the Argos and the CFL very accountable, which is good in this case, and trying to make things right. And I really thought that Thursday would have been better. It didn't go well, so it almost felt like back to the drawing board for the Argos. And look, at this point, I don't think Kelly's going to be on the field this season, and maybe ever again. That's just what it looks like here. It felt very arrogant and colorblind to have him out there on Thursday, and I know he's not there now. It might be too little, too late. What's unfortunate is that we're talking about this instead of training camp being underway, and that is just very unfortunate for the rest of the teams in the CFL, for the players that are on the field. And we got some great comments on the YouTube podcast released earlier this week. How bad of a look is it that your MOP went into this? And I actually went back to last year and my thoughts going into the MOP ceremony. Of course, I didn't know that this was all going to go down, but Brady Oliveira, I still think, was more dominant at running back than Kelly was at quarterback. But you always want the quarterback, whatever, all that kind of thing. And then doesn't this really show why the Argos and Chad Kelly fell apart in the East Final? And six interceptions and like just garbage and enablers and all of this that has been allowed to continue. And hey, if I think the people and the fans keep using their voice, things will be made right eventually. It might take a long time, longer than want it to be, but it seems like it's going to happen.
It's not just fans, though. We have, I forget her name, but she's with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
The branding director, I think. Yeah,
and she had some pretty harsh words. And then we had Christina Constable, who's a manager at the CFL website. Yeah. And then we had what Jim Barker said on the Rod Peterson show, which is maybe Jim Barker needs to get fined or fired, because those dinosaur comments, we're done with that stuff nowadays. So really bad look. If we keep alienating the female employees, not we, they, I guess, if they keep enabling, it's just, it's so frustrating. I can barely talk about it, to be honest with you. Like, man,
it is frustrating. And it does suck that this is a conversation still happening. There was an opportunity on Thursday. The ball was fumbled. And let's see if there's going to be some more questions going forward from media, from fans. There's a lot of questions to be asked and answers to be answered over the next few months. And I really hope that this doesn't become an issue. Grey Cup week, and once the season opens. But this is a tough situation that hasn't been solved yet, and there is still more to come. But let's do our best to talk about training camp. Now, at the end of the show, we're going to get to hopefully your comments and at least discuss the spirit of those comments and the things that have gone down in the past week or so. And we'll go through every team with training camp opening, because every team has questions and every team has changes. And there is a lot to look forward to over the next few weeks. The one thing about CFL training camp, these guys sometimes, they have less than, you know, 2 days to sort of make an impact in the coach's eyes before cut down days. And you think about the amount of opportunities you get in those few hours each day. Training camp in the CFL is tough. And a lot of notable players have already let go. But I think so far, and I'll put the picture up here on the screen, the Hamilton Tiger Cats have stolen the news when it comes to football news, on-field news for the CFL, because here's the picture. Bo Levi Mitchell showed up to rookie camp last week in a walking boot, Sheldon. Now, it was said that this was just precautionary, and they had said that he is going to be on the field on Monday practicing. But in the process, they've extended quarterback Taylor Powell, who obviously got some valuable playing time last year after lots of injuries in that quarterback room, and Scott Milanovich taking over at head coach here. Man, I'm so rooting for Bo to get it on track and have a great season in black and gold. That is concerning to see the walking boot, and it doesn't, I don't know, I haven't heard of many walking boot precautionary things. Maybe directly after an ankle sprain or whatever to kind of keep the swelling in check, but this was not what Ticat fans needed to see at training camp.
Yeah, I don't understand it, because if he's going to be good to go for Monday, then why even have him out there? You don't have to have every quarterback there for a rookie camp. I know most teams do, but why would you risk just alienating your fan base by making them think that Bo is wearing a walking boot, but he's going to be fine, guys? Like, it just make it make sense. Like, yeah. Oh, man. Like, it's just baffling. Like, have the guy sit on the bench, like have him sit on a cart, like anything. Yeah, maybe there'll be questions. Oh, why isn't Bo participating? Yeah, but yeah, it's better than showing the optics of your starting quarterback wearing a walking boot on the first day of practice. Like,
and the news continued in Hamilton when former first overall pick linebacker Jordan Williams announces his retirement, and it sounded like Scott Milanovich didn't know until like a few hours into practice. And yeah, if somebody's not 100% committed, maybe he did the Ticats a bit of a favor by retiring. Now, part of the deal here, Sheldon, was that the signing bonus he received from the Argos would stay on their salary cap because the Ticats acquired him in the trade. I think it was about $30,000, if I'm not mistaken, but that stayed on Toronto's cap, and it's going to stay there. Now that he retired for the Ticats in advance of anything, the Ticats don't lose anything here, but they did make a trade to acquire Jordan Williams, and they exchanged some draft picks, including some picks in the first round. So the Argos benefit by selecting Kevin Mitale from Laval, and the experts are saying that this guy could have an impact right off the bat. And as a Canadian receiver being added to their lineup, I guess it kind of worked out for Toronto that way. The Ticats went down in the first round, and they got an offensive lineman from Laval as well, Dumoulin Duguay. But the ripple effects of this might be big for the Ticats. They've lost some leadership on defense. Tunde Adeleke is in Toronto. Simone Lawrence, he's retired. Ted Laurent recently retired. Those are some longtime playmaker leaders for the Ticats. And probably thought you'd have a good Canadian middle linebacker with Jordan Williams. He's retired. Not a good start to camp for fans of the Tabbies at all, man.
Yeah, it's a tough time in Tigertown. Calgary fans, you might have something to smile about in a few weeks. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, future power rankings. Maybe the Ticats do fall down. There was also some surprising releases. I thought Randy Moss's son was in camp for the Ticats. Thaddeus Moss let go, and they kind of hyped this up. He's got the great last name. They released some of his college highlights. But he's not with the team.
He must have like been either, you know, out of shape or something, because like even just on optics alone, having Randy Moss's son, you think they would have kept him around at least on the practice roster for the first year, if not like trying to do kick returning or something. So it's very interesting for them to release him right off the hop.
There was also a Jamal Davis on the defensive line. Last year, he ended up requesting his release from Montreal, came into Hamilton, and people thought that was going to be a pretty good pickup for the black and gold. And going into this year, he's gone. And then actually the release of receiver Terry Godwin kind of surprised me. But if you look at general manager Ed Hervey, it has been a trend in Hamilton to have some of the small, shiftier receivers. Ed Hervey's changing that. Now, I know Tim White, their star receiver, is not 6'4", but look at the rest of the roster. There's a lot of 6'4s and 6'5s, and there's a 6'8 in there. So I think that just might be kind of a change in philosophy and Ed Hervey wanting to get big receivers into the lineup. He was one. And he did it in Edmonton when he was the GM in Edmonton. They always had these big receivers with the theory that these DBs are beating up on the small guys a little bit. So we'll see what that does to the offense. There might be some new names catching balls in Tiger Town. But like instantly, is Jamal Peters the leader on the defense? There's a lot of changes. This is going to be a... probably a changing of the guard a little bit for Hamilton going into the season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of like fans were hoping it was going to be more of a reload instead of a reboot, like with having Orlando still there. So it's technically not a full regime change, but it's looking more like they have to reboot because they just, like you said, it was a tough week. So now they have all these extra holes to fill, and then you don't know what you have with Bo Levi Mitchell. But Taylor Powell looks to be good. Like, he looks like he has a future, so at least they have him locked down for a couple more years. So if that is what is to happen and Bo is done, then at least you know that Taylor Powell has his chance to show that he's the next guy.
The other story on day one of rookie camp that was fun was number 85. The greatest receiver of all time takes part.
I'm sure he's going to be on the list for sure.
Takes part in day one of Bomber rookie camp. Man, that was
fun.
That's a fun
that
story.
Was fun.
It was, and I love fun. And it looked like he did all right. There were so many stories of I don't know how many ovations he got in training camp back in his playing career. But I'm pretty sure the fans there were probably just watching him, maybe taking pressure off the other guys a little bit, even though maybe they wanted to beat him in some drills. But that was such a fun story from last week. See, there are some positive things going on in the Canadian Football League. And just talking about Winnipeg, I really, you know, at times last year, remember how explosive their offense was? Like when the season started, they were blowing teams up. Until that game in the summer when BC really was able to shut them down. But they got some pretty big losses because they had to. They had to pay Brady Oliveira. They had to pay Dalton Schoen here. So Jamarcus Hardrick goes to Saskatchewan. Demario Houston is in Calgary. But now Chris Strevler is back in the fold.
Yeah.
How big of a role is he going to have in the offense here? It just adds so much more layers and I think creativity for Buck Pearson and the Bombers to play with as the season gets underway.
Yeah, like they had a specific package for him when he was here before, so I'm certain they're going to have that. But he's exciting, and if he's worked on his accuracy, then look out, because that was the one thing he was able to run and run and run. But other than he played the Riders that one time and got chucked a 60-yard bomb, he wasn't that accurate with his throwing. So hopefully he's worked on that for the Bombers' sake. And he's an exciting player. he's just fired up, and I love watching
tough
him.
Tough as nails, like, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's like if he took a fullback and made him a quarterback, like – It's crazy.
And it's
but
always
good for the bomber. And, yeah. And I was so surprised that he's like, I know he's the backup, but I expected his salary to be more than it was too. Like when Three Down Nation came out with their list of all the quarterback salaries, he was less than other backups in the league. So I was quite wild. Shocked with that.
It's always the next man up mentality in Winnipeg. Demario Houston is out, but Tyrell Ford is back. Yes, the twin of Trey Ford. I would love to see those guys matching up somewhere down the line. Where
you know he wants to pick them off.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't that be? Has that ever happened? I'm sure there's a CFL historian that you know has siblings picking each other off, kind of thing. But he's back for the NFL. He's got some real talent, and maybe he just slots right back in, and with the right passport, that again. An advantage for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Huge. And they've also released a first round pick from just a year ago, defensive lineman Anthony Bennett. And maybe we'll talk about Saskatchewan next, because they had, I thought, quite a surprising release as well with Jalen Edwards Cooper, which I thought was a really solid signing and was going to be a good addition at defensive back for the Rough Riders coming over from BC. But it turns out, Sheldon, I believe he failed his physical, and that actually might be the cause of some of these releases happening over the past few days. And with how short camps are and how short of a time these players have to make an impression on their coaching staffs, sometimes there is no room to wait for things like this.
Yeah, apparently he had a separated shoulder last year, and it just hasn't healed like it should. So it's a big loss. But also, for them not to keep him around and keep him on the injured list, I think that must mean that they found some they liked what they saw at the rookie camp, because the Riders, they have brought in, I think it's like 22 or 23 defensive backs for training camp. So wow. There's there's a crazy amount of defensive backs. So obviously, more eyes for them, and with one less perceived starter gone, now there's another job for these guys to get.
Now, another thing you'll notice with training camp in the CFL, if you really look at the transaction page, you'll see people transferred to the retired list. They'll be transferred to the suspended list. And you wonder, what does that mean? Usually it's teams really just playing games, so other teams can't touch them and they don't count against the roster limit. But when you see four offensive linemen transfer to the suspended list for the Riders, sometimes there's passport issues or whatever. They're late getting to camp. That is a question mark for the Riders. The offensive line has been a focus, I think, for probably the past three seasons. And with Trevor Harris last year feeling like he had to run, and then it ended up resulting in injury. I think Harris has the athletic ability to run, but it's obviously last resort, and it didn't work out for the Riders. Now, with some additions to that offensive line, Hardrick, Sevier, some veterans that have gone around in the CFL and played and won Grey Cups, The question is taking this time to gel for Trevor Harris, and the running game with now AJ Ouellette at the helm for the Riders. I do feel like they're going to be a very physical up front, but the question is how soon can they gel, and who's going to be playing at that left tackle spot, protecting that blind side, hey?
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure who it's going to be, but hopefully they find the right guy in camp. I think they're definitely better on the line for sure, so far on paper at least. So hopefully, like you said, they can gel quick, because AJ Ouellette looks like a beast. He's got a nice little hairdo going on. Looks like Thor, like he actually is buying into this. So it's awesome. And I can't wait to see what he does in the games. And then actually what I can't wait for more is the last week of training camp is going to be back in Regina. So I can actually go and check it out and see what's happening.
And my question, and it's not a question that will be answered until October, is can the defense play a whole season? We're at 2 years in a row where the defense in Saskatchewan was very talented. And then just fell off a cliff after Labor Day. All of a sudden couldn't stop the run. Couldn't have any answers for opposing offenses. That's a question that will go on. And, of course, Corey Mace now running the defense instead of Jason Shivers. Will that make a defense for that or a change for or difference? That's what I was looking for that Rough Rider defense. Let's go on
to
the.
I think it will.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, well, even from the first training camp report today, has been said that the practice was intense. And under the Craig Dickinson era, I think it was Jamie Nye who said it. He said he never saw a practice that was actually intense. So Just even in this first day of training camp, I think the defensive issues last year were a lot to do with there not being any consequences and playing players in wrong positions. So I think consequences are definitely going to be abundant if you screw up. I think Mace is going to let you know and he's going to sit you if you do.
Let's go to the Grey Cup hosts, the BC Lions. I feel have a lot of pressure on them this year. And hey, I'm not going to hide it. I'm rooting for Vernon Adams Jr. to get over that hump and make it happen. I haven't released, and we haven't released our predictions for the season, but I'm leaning BC Lions to play in the big game. But that is in November. That's 6.5 months from now. But the big change, now, there has been some changes on this roster, and I think a big focus going into the season is to having a rushing attack. They just didn't focus at all on that last year. Now, Taekwon Mizell, I think, has some talent, and he can make things happen in the running game, but the addition of William Stanback, I think that gives them a bit of a thunder and lightning thing. If Jordan Maximic can make that happen as the OC for the Lions, I think that will help Vernon Adams Jr. not having to drop back 50 times a game, because there were some games last year where he took a pounding against the Rough Riders who got to him, and they did hurt him. But now I think the defensive lineman that was a part of those injuries, Pete Robertson, is now on the BC Lions. So there's been a big change at D-line, I think, for the Lions. Last year, Matthew Betts is still playing for the Lions, but in Detroit. And they've also released David Menard over the past couple of weeks, the Canadian defensive lineman, which I also thought was a very surprising move. This guy's got a motor. We've seen him make plays for Montreal and BC. But now, Pete Robertson comes in and Christian Covington after a 9-year NFL career. Is that D-line going to be able to get after quarterbacks right now on paper? It looks like a very dangerous unit, Sheldon.
Oh, for sure. One of the only things that we need to see is if Christian Covington can get used to being a yard off the ball again, because it's probably been a long time since, you know, grade 12 when he was probably playing, you know, Canadian football, right? So that and like you said, with them getting Stand Back, and if Maximic can actually use Stand Back, like, we've seen what Stand Back can do when he's given the ball. It just, when he was in Montreal, he wasn't given the ball enough, and it was very weird as to why that was happening. So hopefully they can use him, because he's a beast.
Look, and I understand that the running game's not as exciting and maybe doesn't sell as many tickets.
I love the running game.
Yeah.
When I play Madden, I'm pounding the ball.
And like, we've seen, I think Stanback is a guy, the more you give him the ball, the better he is.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be, we'll see if the Lions will lean into that. And maybe they'll have to. Lucky Whitehead is no longer with the team. Dominic Rhymes is no longer with the team. He's back in Ottawa, and he is a touchdown playmaking machine. So I'm sure Ottawa's very happy to have him back. I see this year maybe a bigger role for Justin McInnes, who at times last year had some great games, great catches for the Lions. And maybe they get Javon Kotoy more involved, that big-bodied Canadian receiver. Like, DBs do not want to be in his way. And I'm sure that there's probably going to be another receiver that's going to emerge in training camp to take part in that high-flying BC offense. Like, we know that they can fly. Let's go to Calgary. Now,
let's.
They need to improve everywhere, Sheldon. But I actually am quite interested to see. Jake Mayer started all 18 games for the Stampeders last year, at times brilliant, at other times making bad decisions in the heat of the moment. Now they bring in Matt Schiltz, who at times is also, I think, shown brilliance, and he's got the ability to use his legs as well. I don't know if Jake Mayer is the undisputed starter here, and it might be a battle to watch in training camp. And being pushed is not a bad thing, and that might be a good strategy by Dave Dickinson and company.
Yeah, well, I think when you have a season like you did, I think you need to have that competition. And you may have Mayer slotted as 1A. Like, it may be, like, not set in stone, but having a guy like Matthew Schiltz down on, like, in your back, putting the pressure on you, that can only make Mayer either be better or he's completely done. So he needed a lot of help from his receivers. He didn't get that help a lot of time last year. So hopefully a better year for them too, because he, like you said, he has had games where, you know, he was lights out throwing 5 touchdowns for 450 yards, like that one game against Ottawa when it went to overtime. So he's been there, and obviously Dave Dickinson sees something in him because he was ready to move on from Bo Levi. So
yeah,
it's going to be a make or break year for Jake, I think. So we'll see what happens.
Last year, Malik Henry, the young, speedy receiver, missed much of the year with an Achilles injury. If he's back 100% this year, that is a massive addition to the Stampeder offense. Jalen Philpott missed the entire year last year with a hamstring injury. Him being back is huge for the Stampeders. Of course, the ever steady Reggie Bagleton, and I think things will be okay on the offense because I am a big believer in Dedrick Mills. This guy, it's a running back I don't want to mess with either. So Kadeem Carey being injured, I think, at times over the past couple seasons for the Stamps has allowed guys like Mills and Peyton Logan to get some valuable carries. Mm-hmm. Well, now this is their team, so we'll see how they do. The secondary, I think, is a major battle for the Stampeders. There's been some veterans let go, and they're quite young still back there. So getting Demario Houston in that lineup is big, and everybody's under 30 except for Brandon Dozier in the backfield. Titus Wall is still only 25. I do want to see the D-line. Are they going to be able to get after quarterbacks with Julian Hauser and company with Calgary? Now, this is crazy to say, but the Edmonton Elks maybe have the most continuity on a CFL roster. Now, I know they bring in the new quarterback with McLeod Bethel Thompson. It's all the pressure seems to be on him, and he seems like a guy that can handle it. And I know we were excited to see what Trey Ford could do in 2024, but I see McLeod coming in, Geno Lewis still there. They bring in a Canadian in Curly Gittens, who's familiar with playing with McLeod Bethel Thompson. And if they can have a rebound season from Dylan Mitchell, I think that Elks offense is actually in pretty good shape, man.
Oh yeah, that was a lot of their problem when they had that losing streak, and that home losing streak was they weren't scoring points. Most of the games were, you know, low scoring for the defense. They weren't letting in that many points. So I think obviously Chris Jones saw that was a weakness. And even though Trey Ford, it seemed like some of those games he just wheeled it on his back by just running and sling it in and like no business. But I think we're after year three of a Chris Jones team, and usually by now he has all the pieces that he wants, and he's the type of guy who when he knows that he wants that player, he's going to stick with that player either for the good or for the bad. So adding McLeod Bethel-Thompson, adding Curley Gittens Jr., Javon Leak, and then in their kicking game, having Boris Bidet, he's a 90% kicker. And I don't know why he left Toronto, or they were wanting to move on. I'm not sure, but he has a lot of years left, I think. So that was a huge get for Edmonton.
There was a very young defensive back group with the Elks last year, and as the season moved on, I thought that they got better. But there's another big change at D-line here. Jake Ceresna goes to Toronto. AC Leonard no longer with the team. Those guys made some big plays for the Elks last year. So there's going to be some new names that are going to need to emerge in training camp to get after the quarterback. And we know how much Chris Jones likes that. I like Jamin Pelly up the middle. That guy, 6'5", 330, University of Calgary. One of my players in the CFL. I love being able to watch him. And Chris Jones always has great linebackers. I want to see if that first overall pick, Joel DeBlanco, is going to be able to make an impact there. So that sort of front seven for the Elks, going to have some new names there. But we know with Chris Jones at the helm, they've got some athletes there. They're going to be able to make plays right off the bat. Now, we talked about Toronto a little bit earlier, but only about one player. Let's talk about the rest of their roster, because Sheldon, there's been a lot that have left. And like Boris Beattie's in Edmonton, but now they got Liram Hirilahu. Great player.
Yeah.
I was just looking at their defense, and now they no longer have Corey Mace. But their defense is still going to be able, just with pure talent alone, be able to make offenses pay. There's lots of veterans in that secondary. Tunde Adeleke, Deshaun Amos, Tavares McFadden, Quincy Mojé, Royce Mechie. Like, it's still a great group. And for then the linebackers, they still have Winton McManus. Like, that guy is an absolute monster and a game changer. And the D-line still has Sean Oakman. Still has Robbie Smith, Deontay Knight, Jake Ceresna, Jared Brinkman. The defense is still a unit to be reckoned with, man. Like, they're going to be a problem.
Well, and with what's happening with the quarterback position, the defense is going to have to win games for the Argos while Cameron Dukes gets, you know, settled in there. And I know he played a couple games last year. Beat the Riders in the last game of the season to kick us out of the playoffs. but I honestly, like, before this whole Chad Kelly situation happened, I was kind of thinking maybe that Cameron Dukes might be like one of the guys that Mace and O'Day would try to target after this season with since Trevor Harris is getting up there in age. But this is a huge opportunity for Dukes. But like I said, that defense, which does look still stellar on paper, they're going to have to steal the ball a lot because they might need a lot of chances on offense if they can't figure it out right away.
I'm a big believer in that running back room because we got to see a lot of those guys last year at times with Andrew Harris getting breaks and even AJ Ouellette at times taking time off. Deontay McMahon. This guy can move. Isaiah Bowser as well. And Daniel Adebaboye, the Canadian, and Kadeem Carey. Like, they have a great, I think, running back unit. And then there's still the receivers that I believe in. Guys can make plays. Tommy Neal made plays last year. Tavares Daniels, DeMonte Coxey, Rasheed Bailey's there, Dejon Brissett. So the Argos are still, I think, have a very good roster. And despite the quarterback situation, I think they're still going to be a team in the East to be reckoned with despite all of their losses. But will the circus surrounding the team affect the team in training camp? And that's unfortunate that that might be the biggest question over the next couple of weeks, but you got to think it would have some sort of effect.
Oh, absolutely. But lucky for them, like the East Division, I don't know why every year it is the case, but it's the weaker division. And with what we've seen happen in Hamilton this week, and we're going to talk about Ottawa next here. You're right. Like, Toronto still only has to be better than those other two teams to get a home playoff game.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility. And it just, if Ryan Dinwiddie after training camp today said that he's only here to talk about players that participate. So maybe that's his way of deflecting and hoping that this circus isn't going to be there. But you know that the reporters are going to ask every day until they, you know, figure out how to handle this. But they definitely still have a chance to do damage in the East.
Yeah, they totally do. And let's talk about those Red Blacks. They've got playmakers, Sheldon. We know that. But yeah. Can they get the ball in their hands? That is the biggest issue in Ottawa.
Who's throwing?
Yeah. They bring in Drew Brown. Dustin Crum got a lot of valuable time, and I think he won a lot of people over in 2023, yeah. Me included. He's tough as nails. Valuable Great. Time for him. And Jeremiah Masoli, maybe his last shot at being a starting quarterback in the CFL. But I look at that receiving core, man. Is Braylon Addison healthy? Back into the realm for the Red Blacks. They bring in Dominic Rhymes. That guy, you're talking about a catch radius, I think. If it's within 8 yards, the guy can probably make a play on this thing. We know what Jalen Acklin is capable of. Justin Hardy had 1,000 yards last year, and they bring in a guy like Maurice French, who turned heads at training camp in Edmonton last year. So I think they got playmakers. But Devontae Dedmon is there, back and healthy. Yeah. Can he pick up where he left off, putting the team and the offense in great field position with his dynamic returns? Now, running back. Such a bummer that Devontae Williams got hurt. It really looks like there's going to be a new face there. I know they still have Jackson Bennett, but Rykel Armstead and Kylan Hill seem to be the two guys. Armstead from Temple, Hill from Mississippi. Who's going to be catching or carrying the rock there? I know we talk a lot about CFL fantasy on this show. Those guys are probably going to be really cheap to start the season. Whoever's listed as starter on the depth chart, they're probably going to be my guy for maybe 6 weeks going forward.
Yeah, but the thing in the CFL is running backs truly, and it sounds cliche, but they are a dime a dozen, because every year there seems to be a new breakout running back. And some of these careers for running backs are honestly only lasting 3 or 4 years. We're not seeing the Mike Pringles or the like that longevity at running back anymore. Like, look at Kadeem Carey. He was, you know, top in the league for a year or two, having some injury issues, and now he's in a fight to see if he's even going to be the starter. So who knows what's going to happen? There are still other running backs out there too, like that were on teams last year and weren't signed. So maybe Ottawa goes and picks up one of those guys if these two don't work out. But you might also have Jeremiah, like all three of those quarterbacks can run too. So will they be using the quarterback's legs a little bit more to take the load off the running backs? We'll see what happens.
They've got some talent and experience on that offensive line. I think there's opportunity to make things happen in Ottawa. The 10th anniversary of Ottawa being back in the CFL. The merchandise, the logos looks pretty cool. And I really hope that they make it happen. this year in the CFL. But that being said, hey, the rest of the East is going to want to make it happen as well. Let's talk about the champs first, and they're our last team we're going to talk about. I want to show the ring up on the screen. Wow, that championship ring is a thing of beauty. I love, love, love. And we know Cody Fajardo's pregame speech to the Grey Cup, F-U, just watch. F-Y-J-W engraved inside of those rings. How damn cool is that?
Yeah, no, that's outstanding. Because you know all those guys on that team, that's one thing that motivated them, and you know that's they're never gonna forget about that, and now it's on their ring. Like, how cool is that?
It's another roster I'm looking at. Who's gonna be the starting running back? Is it going to be Walter Fletcher? I don't know if they want Jeshrin Antwi to be the starting running back, but he is so valuable on special teams, and he's so valuable doing that that crazy fake kick, right, on second and 22. They need Antwi doing that.
but both of them, when they were playing last year, they both had success. So obviously, Montreal thought that they were worth letting Stanback go. It'll be interesting to see. I assume it'll be Fletcher starting anyway, but who knows?
Austin Mack is gone from that offense in Montreal, but he came on last year. James Letcher Jr., the returns he was bringing, made Chandler Worthy expendable for the Montreal Alouettes. So I see Letcher doing that. And then Reggie White Jr.'s back. I know last year some were high on him with making the next step in the CFL, but he got hurt. Keon Julian Grant was hurt. He'll be back. Tevin Jones, an addition from the Riders, 6'2", 225. He's a big receiver. He can make things happen with Cody Fajardo. And will going the distance and winning that championship, I didn't even say Tyson Philpott yet, the most outstanding Canadian in the Grey Cup. Will going the distance give Cody that confidence to have that belief right from the beginning? I know coming out of Saskatchewan, there was a lot of doubt in there from the outside and probably in here as well. But once you got that ring on your finger, probably a different mentality for the guy behind center going into 2024.
For sure. I hope so. We saw his first year in the league first year as a starter, where he exceeded expectations and, you know, was an MOP candidate and was, you know, the next big thing in Ryderville. And then he had a down year. So now he's had another year where he's doing amazing, winning a Grey Cup, and now it's just to see if he can maintain that. But I think every year as a quarterback in the CFL, I think you mature, and I think that's good. I think he can do it again. And like we said, like his core, the core of that team is probably second to Edmonton for staying together. So, and with the question marks in the other Eastern teams, especially Hamilton, I think playoffs are all but a certainty unless something crazy happens there. And we saw what they could do. They went on an 8-game winning streak and won the Grey Cup.
Sean Lemon is gone out of Montreal, but in is Isaac Adeyemi Berglund, former Calgary Stampeder. Derek Wiggin, former Calgary Stampeder, is there. And also Dylan Wynn, former Hamilton Tiger Cat, up the middle. So that D-line is going to look a little bit different this year. We're going to see Mustafa Johnson on that line more. I think he can do a lot. And Avery Ellis has made plays in the CFL as well on the end. Now, at linebacker, Darnell Sankey is still there, but two of my favorite players in the CFL are Tyrese Beverett and Reggie Stubblefield. Those guys are going to continue to make plays along with Marc-Antoine Ducroix. That secondary really came on towards the end of 2023 for the Alouettes. I think that championship team and defense is going to be big on carrying them forward. And can the Alouettes carry that playoff success on offense into this season. Jason Moss had a great year at coach, I thought, last year. And just the way things go, wasn't nominated for Coach of the Year, but probably was Coach of the Year.
He was.
At the end of the
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, he was.
He was not popular leaving Saskatchewan. And Danny Machocha bringing Jason in. Look at that. What a story the Alouettes were in 2023. But now they're no longer the glass slippers team, right? They are expected to do well, and that changes things for a team.
Now, I don't know if they're expected. I think, judging by the reactions to what we're going to talk about here, I think they're actually being a little bit disrespected, because there's a lot of people who had problems with me putting them at number one on my power rankings, and I just don't understand that at all.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about just social media in general and the reaction to your power rankings and the reaction to my question of the greatest receiver. Let's start there.
The imaginary list that hasn't been made yet?
Because I just wanted to make this fun video and revisit the history of the CFL and maybe make a top 10 list of the greatest receivers of all time and release it on YouTube, and we can have some fun discussion. But naive me thought that we could have a fun discussion on social media. I was told it was an embarrassing question on Reddit. I was told on Twitter that the fact that Milt Stegall isn't there means that the CFL community would be better without this podcast, and means that
we're biased and we're homers. Yeah,
we don't deserve a podcast, but I just wanted to engage people. And so that's my love-hate relationship with social media. And Sheldon, it's been a lot on you. Like, I kind of gave up with social media because it just hasn't been fun. But
yeah,
but
I'm having fun though.
I'm glad you got thick skin, because I'm a human. This stuff cuts deep sometimes. Like,
yeah.
So just to be vulnerable and honest, but there were so much great contents, and I do want to focus on that. A lot of people talking about their favorite receivers, but acknowledging that, acknowledge me, that there is a lot of other receivers that might be better than their favorites. And it's an exercise that I'm trying to build this list that I'm struggling with, because do you look at yards? There are some guys like Terry Greer and Mervin Fernandez that had a massive impact in the CFL and played for about 6 years and then went to the NFL and had very productive years there as well. So there's this balance between longevity and championships and consistency and yards and touchdowns and receptions. Mm-hmm. It's so objective. And I think maybe the top three are Pitts, G-Roy, Milt. That's... Yeah. And you can have them in any order you want.
No, apparently we can't.
But the rest makes the conversation exciting and fun. Yeah. So for those that have taken part and not called us idiots, thank you for that. Now let's talk about your power rankings, because you were legitimately called a joke, an idiot, a homer, and all this. Now, Sheldon, I know on the outside you show you don't hurt, but I hurt for you, okay? Now, you come into the show, you're such a valuable team member, this is pulling back the curtain. Like, sometimes I am very hard to work with, and I feel like I'm you know, the diva that has my makeup put on, and I'm ready to record at this exact moment, and you're like just waiting. When's this jerk gonna be ready? And then I'm just ready to go, and then it all goes according to plan, usually. And you are just so enthusiastic, and you are called a biased homer, a writer idiot, a delusional writer fan. But we all have biases. That's just a fact of life. But I've worked really hard and I've been on the podcast now for 9 years, to be as balanced as I possibly can. You've been on it for 6 years and came out of the six months, I should say, and came on in a time of need. And hey, we've all got our biases, but we don't need to be calling each other idiots and things like that. So knock it off. Now, Sheldon, I know you're laughing about all of this stuff. The power ranking reaction has kind of, I don't know, are you crying at night or are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay. Like, obviously, sometimes it doesn't feel great to be called an idiot, but like, I honestly tried to be as objective as I could. And am I doing it a little bit to rile fans up a little bit? Yes, of course, because power rankings are extremely divisive. And like you said, we're just trying to build some engagement with this because, I'm not saying that anything that was done before I got here wasn't the next level, but I kind of want to help take the show to the next level. And we have lots of cool stuff that we've been talking about. And I just thought doing a weekly power rankings would be A, fun, and B, I knew it would rile some feathers, and that's fine. I can play the heel of the show if people want me to. I'm having fun. Like I'm answering back to some of these people with facts as to when they call me an idiot, and I'll do that. I'll throw some GIF reactions out there too, because I'm having fun. Listen, love them, hate them, I don't care. Keep talking about them because I like seeing the comments. I like opening my phone and seeing, you know, 20 notifications on Reddit when I never have notifications on Reddit. Like, I'm here for it, but just maybe remember that I'm human too, I guess. But if you call me an idiot, I'm just going to tell you to eat a Snickers bar.
I guess that's what social media is, but sometimes it's hard. Yeah. I'm a human being, you know what I mean?
For sure.
But again, that's why I'm so thankful for our patrons, the people on YouTube. Like, I feel like, and I don't want to jinx anything, but our little quarter of YouTube is extremely positive and constructive. Mm-hmm. And we get some great people on there. But this is only getting started, man. We haven't had a game that is counted on the field yet in 2024, but we're going to get there. Hey, thanks for making me laugh. Thanks for being here. You're not an idiot. And if you are...
I am an idiot. And ask a lot of people that I know, I am an idiot. But I own it.
CFL training camp is underway. I'm Travis Kura. He's Sheldon Jones. We are going to be here every week. And once the season starts, twice a week for the whole season. As much as that is a detriment to my mental and physical health, I do it for the love of the game, man. The love of a game. You can rate and review and subscribe to Two and Out on YouTube and your favorite podcatcher. Hey, we'll be back soon to talk about the latest in the Canadian Football League.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.